The calendar says it's now official, but autumn bliss may be superficial. Yes, we've had the annual seasonal switch, but next is winter, when many will complain. There you go. Welcome to Spectrum West, everyone, where the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin come to talk. This week, you will make the acquaintance of Pat Balder and Glenn Everhard, a couple of busy Twin Cities guys who travel the country entertaining corporate gatherings and theater audiences with a mix of familiar music and interactive comedy. After our conversation, we'll sample the music, which is professional and precise. Catherine Thomas is here with college educator turned author Maureen Mack, talking about her first novel. We'll welcome back supposedly retired music professor Paul Kossower, who's busy as ever playing cello and organ concerts, plus tutoring students on the organ. He has some performances coming up we want to tell you about. And this September, Spectrum kicks off with the news that season 45 for the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra commences on Saturday evening, October 12th, when the RCU Theater at the Pablo Center will reverberate with the sounds of Brahms and an international violin gold medalist, plus a Mendelssohn symphony of equally epic proportions. As you might expect, the enthusiasm level is elevated in director Nobu Yasuda, where fervor is seldom lacking on any given day. This was the only violin concerto that Johannes Brahms wrote, and he must have known that it would be the only one, because it's a doozy.
What do you mean? Doozy.
It's a doozy. Over the weekend, I watched this concerto played by Perlman.
Oh, I see.
And first, it's big enough that it can take up an entire half of a concert. Mm-hmm. It's in the 40-minute range. Secondly, maybe some seventh and eighth position notes way up there, and double string harmonies. Thirdly, I have no idea how anyone, can memorize such a huge and involved work. Tell me, how the heck people do that?
Actually, of course, as a violin student, I played the piece, but I never performed it. I played it with the piano. I memorized it. When you practice every day and also passage by passage, you actually memorize it. Speaking of a pianist, March concert, we are also performing, yes, Brahms piano concerto number 2. It's even longer, 50-some minutes range.
I would have music and a page turner. Are you kidding? The interesting thing, too, about this piece is it has a long orchestral introduction to it.
Yes.
It's almost like 4 minutes long before the soloist jumps in. And there are breaks, thank goodness, because then the soloist gets to rest for a bit, where various woodwinds get the spotlights. So it's not just the memorization of what you're playing. It's memorization of where to come in. And I'm just, that fascinates me.
You see, that's actually not that difficult, because that's what we practice every day. Okay, I mean, of course, it's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's a profession. And then you just mentioned about, long interaction. Basically, this is a violin concerto, but it's very symphonic.
Yeah.
It's a great piece. It's a violin solo is not just a solo. Interaction between the violin solo and orchestras are just fantastic.
Three movements.
Pablo Sarasate, he was an incredible virtuoso violinist, Spanish violinist. When he was given this piece, he complained about the beginning of the second movement. He didn't complain about the first movement, the introduction. He thought that's an incredible preparation for, the violin. But the second movement started with a beautiful oboe solo. Beautiful oboe solo. And Sarasate complained, why I have to stand for a long time to listen to the oboe solo before, I start playing the melody.
I knew the oboe had a big part in it, because the video that I watched with Perlman playing the violin had him listed as the soloist, but there was also an oboist listed as the soloist, so it must be a big part.
It is a big part. I'm glad to hear that, because quite often it's neglected. We have also a wonderful principal player, Steve. We already had a first rehearsal last week, and he's just doing a fantastic job.
So now, as a refresher, Brahms Violin Concerto is an opus 77. Explain to people listening the meaning of the opus number again. Is that how many pieces he's written up to that point?
Right. Basically, opus 1. Usually, that's the first major piece, the composer wrote and it probably published. I mean, you know, because many composers, you know, has to still learn to compose, you know, well. So then, you know, many study kind of a composition exists. So they don't want to actually publish those things as, you know, their actual work. Mm. So opus means it's a work. Brahms' first piano concert is opus 19, so means early work. In a way, I can say that Brahms' violin concerto was composed during his maturity of composition.
I was surprised that that was his only violin concerto.
You know, the thing is, you know, Mozart wrote 40, Beethoven 9. He actually was working on 10th and then couldn't finish it. And then Brahms wrote only 4 symphony. When you think about that, he at least wrote 1 violin concerto. That's actually good. And he wrote 2 piano concertos. I mean, he was a pianist too. I mean, even Beethoven only wrote 1 violin concerto. He wrote 5 piano concertos.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, it is good. He just wrote 1 really good violin concerto. Brahms, in my opinion, you know, he never really wrote anything bad.
Sometimes
Beethoven, he had some really kind of questionable pieces.
Nobu's in the studio with us, music director and conductor of the Chippewa Valley Symphony. They came up with a straightforward title for the October concert. It just lists what they're playing. Brahms' Violin Concerto and Mendelssohn's Reformation Symphony. Now, this is your second season in the Pablo Center, and having it as a venue is paying off because having a place like this helps you to land people like the soloist who's playing.
Right. I've been saying since last year that, you know, now I feel like, you know, the door is wide open to the world. I mean, we have a wonderful venue, so we can just invite anybody. Right. So the door is wide open. We are very excited about that.
Your guest artist is a big deal, Richard Lynn. He's the gold medalist in the International Violin Competition in Indianapolis. Do we have to say Indianapolis, or is this the, or does each city have its own international violin competition?
Yeah, you still have to say the International Violin Competition of Indianapolis.
Okay.
However, though, many people think that, oh, this is just a kind of a local, you know, competition, because Indianapolis is not New York, it's not Chicago, but because of the Indiana University School of Music, you know, this competition is a big deal, especially for the violin.
Okay.
It's honor of the Joseph Gingold, an incredible teacher. He was the one actually kind of founded this violin competition. Recently, the winners of this competition, after, you know, they win, they start performing with the Chicago Symphony, New York Phil, Berlin Phil. It's a really a big deal.
These are perceived as the best of the best, mostly young people, I would think. Are audiences at this competition? Can you go and watch that?
Yes, yeah, of course.
Okay, so what's the competition like?
Actually, when I was a student at the Indiana University, I didn't enter, but I went to the semifinal and the final. And they actually invite, I don't know exactly how many violinists, but probably about 30 from the world. They usually enter with a videotape or maybe a CD. So they're pre-selected. In the first round, usually they perform something like Paganini caprices and Bach, you know, solo sonatas, violin sonata with the piano.
To be on an even keel, everybody plays the same thing?
Not exactly, but basically, you know, Paganini wrote 24 caprices.
Okay.
Quite often, you choose like 3-4 caprices and you have to perform.
Okay.
Or sometimes they say, okay, could you play either 5, 6, 7, 24, something like that. And then probably you can choose some of the Bach solo partita or sonata. You can choose, or they have a list. They don't play exactly the same repertoire. They usually have like a 2 kind of a preliminary round. Usually third round is like you play like a Mozart violin concert with small orchestra.
Okay.
And after you're selected, probably 6 finalists perform the big violin concerto with a big orchestra.
Let's move on to Mendelssohn, the Reformation Symphony. It's also known as Symphony No. 5.
Mm-hmm.
It's also in D. Both of your pieces are in D.
It's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to go back to the Brahms, but many violin concertos written are in D because the, you know, violin strings are G, D, A, E.
Yeah.
So D is a very kind of good key to resonate.
Felix Mendelssohn. He didn't like being called Jake, I guess. Jacob Felix Mendelssohn, and he went by Felix. I like Jake myself. Why would you want to be Felix when you can be Jake? Anyway, here's a little known fact. Think Hark the Herald Angels Sing. He did the melody for that.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Learn something new when you come
sure,
to see
of course.
Uncle Al. The Reformation Symphony, another big piece?
Yes, but you just asked me about the opus number. So this is number 5.
Yeah.
I was studying this score, and I did study already Mendelssohn, Symphony number 3, and we performed the number 4 a couple of years ago.
Mm.
So this is my first time actually studying the number 5. So then as I studied, somehow I was a little bit puzzled. Many, many melodies actually in Fifth Symphony, somehow it's coming from other early works.
Mm.
And also somehow I felt like the structures are completely different from number 3, number 4. Then I discovered the fact he actually wrote this symphony after he finished the first symphony. It was not really a success, and he revised it twice, and somehow he just left it.
And then
it was not published when he was still alive. Then after he passed away, almost 20 years later, this symphony was published as number 5. However, still this symphony is a fantastic symphony. This number 5, I really felt lots of kind of a youth and also not childish. Of course, Mendelssohn died actually also very young, at the age 30-something. Mendelssohn was about 20 years old when he was writing this number 5. Probably not even 20.
Wow.
So when you think about that young man, then I understood. Oh, I see. He just finished a trip to Scotland, the Hebridean, Fingal's Cave.
Okay.
He actually wrote a piece. And I heard a lot of similar motifs in this symphony.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, he's recycling from me a long time ago. No, because he went to this trip and he was already writing this symphony at the time.
The concert is Saturday, October 12th. It's at 7:30. We've covered what is being played. But that's not all. You have your second annual fundraising gala 2 days before the concert.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Thursday the 10th. The second is always a lot more fun than the first, isn't it?
Yeah, well.
It's at the country club.
It's at the country club at 6 o'clock. And then, it's going to be fun. And then Mr. Richard Lin, the guest violinist, will also perform
some pieces there
too.
Oh, wow.
And also the executive director of the International Violin Competition of Indianapolis. Actually, he's my best friend, Glenn Kwok. He is going to be the keynote speaker. He's ambassador of music. So he's just the nicest person.
Sounds like fun. Now, I bet you there's going to be food and drink as well.
Of course, yeah. Food and drink. Yeah, of course, yeah.
Auction, silent auction?
Yes, silent auction. I don't know what they are, but obviously that's the kind of a main thing.
Certainly, it's a fundraiser. To order tickets, you can call the symphony office at 832-6366. As is always the case, a season of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra is busy, and we will cover it all. Always a pleasure to have Noble in the studio. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. Please come. It's going to be a great concert.
By the way, the oboe player extraordinaire on the Brahms piece, the Steve that Nobu affectionately mentioned, is Steve Myala. The healthy chunk of oboe contained in the piece deserves the recognition, and that is my attempt at providing it. That's part of the second movement of Mendelssohn's Reformation Symphony. Let's bring it to the foreground a little longer. Thank you. During the fall membership drive, remember your pals at Spectrum West and become a member with a gift to the place you hear about so many fine things going on in western Wisconsin. Call 888-202-2552, please, or go online to WPR.org. Thank you. Listening to Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony. Guest violinist Richard Lynn joins the orchestra to begin the season on Saturday, October 12th, 7:30 at the Pablo Center at the Confluence. Tickets at pablocenter.org. Can't hear about that too often. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, offering fair trade gifts and a space for meetings, retreats, or classes in their historic schoolhouse overlooking the Red Cedar Valley. Simply-dunn.com. Maureen Mack has written some notable nonfiction, and after some urging from family and friends and believing a novel was always inside, she decided to splash into fiction. Catherine Thomas invited her to share the details.
Maureen, you spent your professional career as a professor in the Department of Education Studies at UW-Eau Claire. Tell me what you focused on.
I went to the university to direct a graduate program in special education and learning disabilities, did some administrative work, and had my position transferred to what is now educational studies to focus on issues pertaining to girls and women at risk. But also did work in educational assessment, middle school methods, designed a course in women's studies, a variety of things.
So this is your first novel, Wild Dreams, and the protagonist is a woman. I'm going to take a guess that your academic work did in some way inform this book.
It really did. I mean, I've always wanted to write a novel, but because so much of my writing has focused on current issues regarding girls and women, I really wanted to put some of those issues in a story.
If you were going to summarize the book in just one or two sentences so we have an idea of the plot in a nutshell.
A young woman with one leg planted in Cork, Ireland, and the other in the dance world in Chicago, and really does not belong to either.
Now tell me why you chose to set the book across time the way you did. We start in, I think, the 50s. We go all the way to the 80s by the end of the book.
Yeah, it is different than a lot of novels where it starts and finishes in a pretty condensed period of time. I guess I didn't know I was going to do that when I started. I love Ireland. I wanted to write about the stunning, beautiful countryside of Ireland. I had been in an estate that Moran Manor is modeled after. It's Bantry House in Cork. I knew where I wanted the story to begin. But in dealing with the issues that women face, they're not resolved in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years. I think the serious issues take a very long time to resolve in their life. And it's a series of making better choices, getting healing, therapy. And I think that's why I extended the story. I wanted people to see her, a young woman, 22, totally lost, and I wanted them to follow her through her life.
What are some of the issues that she faces throughout the story?
Well, one is she really has issues with identity. She does not know where she belongs, has difficulty relating to American young women because her story is so different coming from Ireland. When we meet Deidre in Chicago in her early 20s, the culture between the U.S. and Ireland for women was about 50, 60, 70 years behind. Ireland was extraordinarily repressed with respect to women. Women could not own property in their name once they married. There was no legal access to birth control. And the church and the government were pretty much the same. Whereas the U.S., women's rights were really exploding on the scene all over the place. So that's a real conflict How does she deal with that? How does she deal with that when she gets home? She's one person when she's home. She's another person when she's in the U.S. At some point, she just has to make decisions for herself based on her own belief system and her own comfort level.
Her father is an Irishman. He owns the family estate, and he seems to me to be representative of that Irish past you were talking about in the book. Deirdre refers to it as backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about her relationship with her father. How does that play out in the story?
I don't think it's a conflict that a lot of girls and women aren't familiar with. But in Ireland particularly, a strong man was a man during this era, 50s, 60s, 70s, and maybe even breaking into the early 80s. A man was supposed to take care of his family. He made all the decisions that were important. He invested primarily in his sons, in education, business. And women, the life of girls, were at home. Fathers felt it was their responsibility to guard their girls, to protect them. They should remain at home until they got married. And then they, under Irish law, would still be at home because it was not legal for a woman to earn money on her own when she got married. The first time I was in Ireland, I was stunned, early 80s, and I did not see any women anywhere in hotels and restaurants. You just didn't see them. When I returned in the 90s, young women were running hotels. They were doing concierge work. So things had really changed because the laws in Ireland were beginning to change. They had a woman president, and a lot of young Irish women came to the U.S. for business degrees and went back. But Deirdre's father, like I think a lot of us and maybe a lot of issues that are close to our heart, they really have to be pushed into changing and seeing things differently. And he really did need to be pushed by Deirdre. Simply, Deirdre just was not going to obey him as she might have as a child when she had no power.
We're talking with Maureen Mack, the author of her first novel, just released, called Wild Dreams. There are also several women characters in the book that Deirdre interacts with, her two aunts. She has a relationship with her mother, who is deceased. I don't want to say that it's a ghost in the story, but it's an element in the story that is still there. How does she relate to these women in her life?
I think you're right. Deirdre's mother does remain a ghost for her because no one informs her anything about her mother. She was only six when her mother dies. Nobody kept her legacy alive for her. And then, you know, she's transported to the U.S. at age eight. And I don't think that's that unusual. Loss was dealt with. You know, we don't think about it. We just move on. We certainly don't talk about it to children. It'll just make them sad. As far as the other women, Deirdre's aunt, her father's sister, is a very traditional woman. She takes over, steps into Deirdre's mother's role. Her other aunt, her mother's sister that she lives with in Chicago, is a modern woman, more independent, living alone. We don't really know anything about her background. She's more of a mentor for Deirdre. But her really close friend is Sissy. I still love the character of Sissy, the glue that helps her develop an American identity and become maybe a little bit stronger just through having Sissy there, a real strong, loyal, faithful friend all the way through their entire lives.
You mentioned the importance of having a mentor, and I think some of your nonfiction was about that. The Finding Center, Strategies to Build Strong Girls and Women, encourages women to find their own internal standard of value. Do you think that your main character in Wild Dreams does establish an internal sense of value?
Very much so. I think when we meet her, she really is lost in terms of identity, value, where she belongs. And through a series of steps and missteps, you know, having to deal with those over time, she really does. And I think what really helps her is when she confronts her father and doesn't succumb to his wishes for her, even as an adult. He is still wanting her to come home, work the family business, and she stays her course, not knowing what the consequences are going to be, but she learns to stand up for herself. And I think that's the job of a lot of women today in our society. those dreams don't go away, you know, and as we talk to women maybe who haven't actualized their dreams over their lifetime, it does result in a regret. And if you listen to women of that age, their advice is go live your own dream. Don't give away all your loves and inspiration as you have a family or as, you know, your life goes on. Build and follow part of your dream.
There's romance in this book and sex. Deidre, the main character, has several relationships with men. It brought to mind for me the relationship between sex and power. There's a rape scene. How do you see sex and empowerment or disempowerment in Wild Dreams for the main character?
I'm really glad that you bring up this issue. Assault and rape is not sex. It is physical violence. It does affect a woman internally, particularly when she's young and trying to develop, you know, some sense of sexual identity and sexual power of her own. That kind of an assault gets in very deeply. I think one needs time and professional help to get beyond that. It's also something I think you take with you for your entire life, and it keeps bubbling up depending upon what issue you're confronting. I wanted Deidre to be a sexual human being. I enjoyed writing those scenes, you know, enormously, and I had beta readers of quite different generations that really enjoyed those scenes as well. Wild Dreams is primarily women's fiction. The reason we put slash romance on that is I was advised to do that for sales purposes. And there is romance. And the difference between women's fiction and romance, women's fiction primarily is about following a story in a woman's life based on the kinds of struggles and problems that women face. I want to put something out there for girls and women to read, enjoy the story, but also walk away thinking about in their own lives.
You're doing a book release for Wild Dreams Monday, September 30th at the Experience Center at Visit Eau Claire. That's in the Pablo Center. So anyone who's interested in picking up a copy of the book or talking to you about romance versus women's fiction or trips to Ireland to research the book can stop by between 4:30 and 7. So Maureen Mack, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much, and congratulations on your first novel.
Thank you so much, Catherine. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, ladies. You're listening to Spectrum West on WPR. Here's a Spectrum memo. Sunday afternoon, the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra begins their 22nd season with the music of McCartney, Bloch, and Fauré. 2 p.m. at the Pablo Center. Don't miss it. Mr. Paul Kossower is a man of enormous musical talent. Couple that with the fact that he's a heck of a nice guy and furthermore generous with his time and what he knows, and you have the makings of someone, a dose of whom every budding musician needs. We've spoken with Paul on past occasions to talk about his relationship with the cello. This time, we're talking about Paul the organist. The retired UWEC music professor is performing on the university's Gantner Hall organ this Sunday at 2, playing the music of French masters. He stopped in recently. Now, your career is so long and impressive, but I still enjoy going back to find out how people got involved in something that became long and impressive careers. Paul Kossower, which came first, the cello or the keyboard?
The keyboard.
So how old were you when you started piano lessons?
Five.
Five. I read that you, as a teenager, started the organ.
Right, at 12, actually, I did. My father was a pastor, and it was sort of a natural thing to go into. They needed an organist. But I started like a lot of people, you know. I didn't have any formal training when I first played the organ, so I was a pianist playing the organ at 12.
Well, our conversation this week is about keyboards and the organ, but just to backtrack a bit, the cello, when did you pick that up and how?
I picked the cello up at 9, and it was sheer accident. My sister and I went to the school, and I wanted a trombone, and I forget, she wanted saxophone, and all they had left was a violin and cello, so she wanted the smaller of the two strings that I took the cello in.
Let's differentiate between piano and organ. Other than the stops and the foot pedals, I don't see much fundamental difference between piano and organ. Am I being naive?
Well, you know, most people would say that, you know, it's a keyboard. But there is quite a difference. There's an art to it, a technique of sustaining. On the piano, to help you sustain, you put down the sostenuto pedal, you know, and when you make chord changes and all that. On the organ, you have to do it most, of course, with your fingers. And there are specific techniques, even playing hymns. Every repeated note is lifted, but all the other voices are sustained. You have to hold them down as you lift. Whereas in piano, you put down sostenuto pedal, you can let go of the chord, and it's still ringing. You can't do that on the organ. And then knowing what stops to use in combinations, then coordination, feet and hands.
My first introduction, if I recall, to the organ, after my mom and dad walked into the house with our first hi-fi, my mother quickly started collecting albums. And I remember one of the albums that she was most proud of and listened to a lot was E. Power Biggs.
He was a great organist. They called him Electric Power Biggs because he was so talented. But he did all kinds of recordings in the European instruments and probably some in our country too. He just was the one. And you would buy recordings and it was E. Power Biggs all the time. It seemed to be in that era.
You graciously donate your time to instruct university students on the organ. Slap me if I'm wrong here. The organ takes back seat to the prolific piano. So first, why does the organ sometimes feel antiquated? What should we know about the organ that we don't know? I'm a big organ fan. Blues and jazz, when the B3 starts playing, I love that. What do piano students say about the organ after experiencing it?
They, too, I think at first think it's going to be pretty easy. And then they sit down and they realize there is a specific technique to it, and they struggle with that at first. But I think it helps if they hear the music, they hear organ. Now, at the university, I practice a lot, so the students hear that organ, and they tell me they enjoy hearing it, and that stimulates that they want to study. But between piano and organ, it's quite a change for them. But to play the organ, you need a good piano background. It's too much at once if you start with your feet and hands and haven't studied the piano. So I find the piano very expressive to the touch. The organ isn't. You have to create the sounds and expression through longevity and releases of the notes. And the selection of the specific stops you use, like selection of instruments in the orchestra.
Are they called bass pedals, those rods that you're playing with down there?
They're just called the pedal board. It's another keyboard. It has its own specific sounds. And yes, it is more like the foundation of an orchestra. On the other hand, you can use the pedal board with high sounds, as I will Sunday. I'll play a melody in Paradisum in the pedal and accompany it with the strings on the organ. My feet will be the solo.
Oh, wow. And the Sunday is a concert, an organ recital of famous French composers. This coming Sunday, the 29th, 2 p.m., Haas Fine Arts Center, Gantner Hall. We're talking with Paul Kossower, Professor Emeritus, University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, where he coordinated the string division, conducted the chamber orchestra, plus taught cello and organ. Sunday's concert. What's on the program? I took French for 2 years in high school, but I'm not going to try these.
I'm not the best at it either. The program opens with this beautiful cortege and litany by Marcel Dupré. It starts very softly with the main theme in chordal fashion, very easy to listen to. On the next page, it has a secondary theme. And to make it the long and short of it, it finally builds up. And it puts theme one and theme two together at the grand finale with a full organ at the end. And it sounds like chimes ringing with the massive chords back and forth at the end. It's a marvelous piece.
Yeah. And your second piece I see here is a foray. And I know the Chamber Orchestra is featuring some foray in their concert coming up this weekend as well. Nam Ji Kim is playing.
That's right. This is from the Requiem in Paradisum. It's sung usually by a soprano, and it's such a beautiful solo. I can't quite duplicate the beautiful voice of a soprano in my feet. But it's a very lovely arrangement of that.
And Thou Art the Rock, and then Celestial Banquet, and Carillon de Westminster. That sounds melodic as heck.
Yeah, it is, and that's from the clock tower, you know, the Carillon.
Sure.
And the university has the same chiming.
We hear it.
Yeah, we hear it between classes.
Yeah, I guess I've heard that.
The four-note motive, you know,
yeah,
and then part of it. So this is a marvelous work. It starts soft, and it has this murmuring effect. I play the theme with the left hand and the company with the right, and it builds up to a very grand sound. It's such a joyful piece. You can imagine, if you've ever been in Salzburg on a Sunday morning and hear all those bells going at the same time from those churches, it sort of reminds me of that, these giant chords back and forth at the end. And the people will be able to hear the theme all the time throughout.
You just made me want to go to Salzburg. Romance from Symphony No. 4 and Chorale No. 1 in E major, those round out the program. This is neat that you do this. You don't have to do this. You're retired. You like to play, and people love to hear you play.
Well, thank you.
So we appreciate that.
I always try to improve all my life, and I don't care what age you are. As long as your fingers work well and you're in good health, you can improve.
And if you can't make it this Sunday, the following Sunday, October 6th, you have another concert up in Spooner, the proceeds of which are going to support a fund of the Spooner Education Foundation for remaining installation expenses and future maintenance of their organ, which is a 340-pipe Wix organ. I did notice online that there is a Wix organ company yet.
There is.
So this isn't an antique. It was dedicated just 2 years ago. Have you played this one before?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't? Ooh. What's that like when you sit down at an organ? Is there a getting familiar span?
The challenge on this organ is it's four ranks of unification.
Tell people what that means. A rank. What's a rank?
Yeah, a rank is one rank means you have, like a flute would be 61 stops, and every note of the flute is pipes at various heights and shapes. The higher the pitch, the shorter the pipe.
Yes.
And this particular instrument has a string and it has some flute sounds and it's some principles. Now, they can divide that up electronically and break them into higher pitches, even though it's only four ranks. So this organ will have some versatility. It certainly will. But very challenging to play a repertoire of concert stature.
What kinds of things do you plan on playing up there?
I'm kind of brave. I'm playing a major prelude and fugue by Bach, prelude and fugue in C minor, and another dance and sing piece that will lend very well to that instrument, a light piece by Bach, a little bit of Reger, that'll be challenging, Benedictus, and then I'm playing familiar hymns like Amazing Grace and Morning Has Broken and Variations on America, and Paul Mons wrote a very difficult, actually, partita on O God, Our Help in Ages Past, and I plan to end with a Coronation March by Meyerbeer. That will suit the organ well, and then they love to sing God Bless America at each concert.
Ah, well, there you go.
This is so unusual. How many high schools have a pipe organ? It's very rare.
It is. That also is a 2 p.m. concert. It's called October Airs, a pipe organ concert. Spooner, 2 p.m. Sunday, October 6th in the high school auditorium. I wasn't aware that the Spooner area has a thing called the Intermezzo Music Club, and they specialize in putting on live music presentations. So way to go for them up in Spooner.
They're doing wonderful.
I've often said someone who has never been to a symphony orchestra concert only needs to go once, and they'll be back. It's one thing to never be exposed to something, and it's another to find that it's been missing in your life. So wonderful job for the music club up in Spooner. They may not hear, I'm going to call you this, and you may blush, a virtuoso organist, and they're going to be able to do that. So that's good stuff.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and I want to promote organ the best I can. It's a wonderful instrument.
It can move you.
It can, and it can express feelings during a service of joy and thankfulness, and I find that it can really enhance the scriptures and all, and you try to choose music accordingly. You must put feeling in the pipe organ when you play it too. If you don't, it's going to just be a collection of notes and maybe played well rhythmically, but it doesn't mean a thing.
We will see you at Gantner Concert Hall Sunday at 2 p.m. in the Haas Fine Arts Center for an organ recital of famous French composers Paul Kossauer. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Al.
the afore enjoyed Paul Kossover on the keyboard there. Good stuff. Hey, you know, we appreciate you as listeners, and that appreciation hits a new level when you're a member of the WPR family financially. Listener support is our largest funding source, and during our fall membership drive, your gift of support helps keep all your favorite programming alive and well. Call as soon as you can, 888-202-2552, or go online to WPR.org, and thanks a bundle. Speaking of support, support for WPR comes from Charter Bank of Eau Claire, a locally owned community bank now offering new checking account options with personalized customer service. More information is available at charterbank.bank. And you know, it feels like a contradiction to say you know of two guys who are very serious about entertaining by experiencing the most fun they can possibly have on stage. Yet, that's Glenn Everhart and Pat Balder. Their show is called Song Blast. These two guitar players know their instruments, and they know their audiences. Steeped in the world of corporate entertainment, they also enjoy theaters and community venues like the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, to which they bring their show Friday, October 4th. You guys have music degrees in guitar and vocal performance. Was there any karma involved back then that would have predicted this destiny as performers or as partners? What did you imagine for yourselves back when it was just classrooms, practice rooms, and theory?
That's a good question. You mentioned not really a coincidence, but a little bit. Pat and I went to college almost simultaneously, very close to each other, but never met, and found out, 30 years plus later that we were following in each other's footsteps in and out of some of the same clubs. There's a chance that Pat might have even heard me perform at some point in time with his then fiance, now wife. So, he was at St. John's, and I was at St. Cloud, so we were pretty close.
That's almost spooky.
You know, I think, though, when you're a young musician and you're just starting, you know, you're just trying to get gigs, you don't really have a master plan. You're trying to get gigs, but then you get older and you have a family and kids. Glenn has two kids. I have three kids, and mine are all in college age. And you start looking at how do you create recurring revenue that sustains two households' lifestyles. We're fortunate to get together when we did, when we were sort of on top of our professions and on top of our, you know, our technique and everything as performers. And we met 7 years ago, because we both had two separate acts on the same agency roster. I had a corporate rock band. Glenn had a solo acoustic and comedy show. And the CEO of the agency just arranged a blind date for us. And we met, and then that's how we gave birth to the world's only full-time dueling guitars act.
I think that's the first time you've ever used the word gave birth regarding us, Pat. That was very, very nice.
I got to tell you, I'm thrilled now that I know that you're the only one out there.
Right. Al, we were ready to merge, even though we were unaware that we were ready to merge. And so it was rather serendipitous that we fell together. The power of collaboration, 1 + 1 does not equal 2. 1 + 1 equals something more like, I think, 7, in terms of what Glenn and I can do together. Mm-hmm. The things we can accomplish on stage as a duo versus a solo act is exponentially greater than 1 + 1. And that's very interesting. And if I were to go back and talk to my younger self, I would just say your ideas are not precious. Find somebody with whom you can collaborate to build something far bigger than what you could imagine.
Well said.
Yin and yang personalities. I'm the acoustic guy, Pat's the electric guy. You know, we play games with the audience, testing their knowledge of popular and rock music and the guitar. It's a lot of fun. People come up on stage in our show. We were just talking today. We'll be doing some performing at the, what is it, Pat?
A convention out in New York City in January. We're going to go out there and showcase. And there's like 3,600 of the top performers in the corporate market showcasing for, you know, thousands of buyers across the world playing every year. And so our scope for our market has always been United States and beyond, Canada, Mexico, and the Caribbean. And we're looking to expand that market even further in 2020, 2021.
Hopefully you're smart like a lot of other Midwestern-based entertainers, and you find gigs in the southern parts in the wintertime.
Yeah. Florida is a big market for us in January and February, and now it looks like we'll also become that in March.
Smart guys.
So that's good. Yeah, absolutely.
On the phone with Pat Balder and Glenn Everhard, Song Blast Dueling Guitars, appearing Friday, the 4th of October, in western Wisconsin, Heidi Center, Chippewa Falls, 7:30 p.m. That's when Pat, Glenn, and Roxanne hit town. Do you guys still...
You really did some research.
Oh, yeah.
We're on our fourth van now.
So Al, we've named all of our vans after famous sort of rock and roll women. And we had Roxanne. We had Oprah. She's not rock and roll. We had Layla. And now we are traveling in Yoko.
Yeah, that's a stretch to put Yoko and music together. Good for you guys.
Are you going to leave that in?
She's not listening. I'm not worried. You guys, do you still do county fairs?
Sometimes.
Okay.
A few a year. You know, oftentimes we'll get sent out for a single day. We'll drive, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours and you know, be the headliner at a county fair. But it's not a lot of our work.
Well, that's fun stuff, though. The reason I ask is I wanted to know the difference between a corporate crowd and one at a county fair.
Well, the Heidi Center is a perfect show for Song Blast because it's captive audience. It's in a theater. We control the lights. We control the audio. You know, you can control the humor much more when you have a captive audience situation. So much of our show is interaction with the audience in a humorous way, improvisationally. You know, they're up on stage and or we're talking to the audience in a funny way. And then the music is the glue that just weaves the whole thing together. So we love theaters and we love corporates. Those are our sweet spot.
I tried to cut a deal with Glenn to become more of a draw at fairs. I agreed that I would learn how to juggle if he would learn how to swallow a sword. And that way I thought we'd become more visually appealing to the audience. But he has not taken the bite on that deal.
Well, a lot of time left. Now,
taking the bite.
The other thing is at a county fair, you eat good.
We don't eat any of the food at fairs.
Come on.
No, we don't.
That's right. You guys, fitness is big for you. But if you don't do those costumes anymore and you don't dress up like Elvis, who cares what you look like? Come on.
Our wives.
Oh, okay. All right.
Plus, we look in the mirror and you know, we're trying to beat that clock of father time. And Pat's 52 going on about 35. That's about what he looks. But I spend too much time in the sun in my life to try to look young anymore. So I just got to stay fit.
Do you guys do one show or do you do several and depending on the crowd?
Ladder. It's dependent on the crowd.
We have different modules we place in and out. We look at the age, the demographic, the length of the show, and then we put our pieces together and create the show.
And you are extremely dependent on technology.
Yes, we are. Don't we know that?
Has it screwed up for you?
Well, things happen all the time. People say, do you get nervous? I'm like, I don't, you know, we don't have any nervous about the show, but I run our sound. Glenn runs our lights. And so things happen. I mean, cables break for no reason. Wireless connectivity doesn't work. Another axe wireless microphone starts interfering with your wireless frequency. These things happen. You got to solve them in real time. And that's the stuff that is putting years on my visage. I'm getting old, worrying about all these technical anxieties.
But he's good at it.
Yeah.
That's really, really good at it.
It's nice to hear, too, that you have kind of a mutual admiration society going on.
We're the only two in it.
Yeah.
I spend more time with Glenn than I do with my wife.
Wonderful talking to you guys, Pat Balder and Glenn Everhard. Thanks for being with us on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Al, for having us on. We really appreciate it.
Here's a little medley of some classic rock, Song Blast. You'll like it.
It's more than of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo,
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 Magnifico. I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family. Spare him his life from this monstrosity.
easy come, easy go. Left bass, new way, dance great. Anyways, still rock and roll to me.
Song Blast, a whole lot of fun and great music. Coming to the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, Friday evening, October 4th, 7:30 p.m. The website is cvca.net. Tickets are going fast. The following night, by the way, Saturday, October 5th, Ian and the Dream, Ian Ash, indie pop at its best. Hey, we have time to get in some Spectrum memos here for you. Saturday evening, they've been guests on Spectrum West. It's Buckets and Tap Shoes, speaking at the Heidi Center, 7:30. As usual, cvca.net, again, the website. The Western Wisconsin Pottery Tour is this Friday and Friday to Sunday. Find all the details you need online at westernwisconsinpotterytour.com. The Fall Gallery Adventure is this weekend, featuring seven galleries, 110 in Frederick, Balsam Arts in Balsam Lake, Art Z in Amory, Cafe Ren in Luck, Baker Orchard in Centuria, Marchese, I hope that's pronounced, I just butchered it probably, Design, and the Polk County Information Center, both in St. Croix Falls. Friday and Saturday, it's the 2019 Blues Party at the Silver Dome Ballroom near Neillsville. Great music, food, and free limited camping, silverdomeballroom.net. 200 Main Gallery in downtown Eau Claire features a discussion of art with Dick Millhiser from 7 to 9 p.m. Friday. And then Monday evening, a one-of-a-kind presentation called Tiger, the Unreliable Bestiary. Deke Weaver, an educator, focuses on endangered animals or habitat. Not enough time for details here, but go to unreliablebestiary.org and get yourself all ready. Big thanks to Dean and Kate for guidance and promotional support. Thank you for being in the audience. Thank you especially for your participation during our fall membership drive. Can't tell you how much we appreciate that. Let's see. Coming up next week, I think we'll talk about the history of the guitar. There's a new book out, and I've checked it out and continue to check it out. Everybody wants to know about the history of the guitar. We'll be turning on the Barron Spotlighters. There's a new Master Singers season in the offing. All that next week. For Catherine Thomas, I'm Al Ross. See you then.